What's up, guys? Welcome to the Locked On Clippers podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. I am Honest Chuck Mockler.
And I'm William, the Opinion Updike.
We got a pretty busy Monday. We're going to be talking about the SI Top 100, the first 50 came out. After that, we have the Freshies, as we do every single Monday. We're going to be breaking down the team's faith in Jerome and SGA. And then at the end, a little bit of Serbian love from the Clippers' Serbian units, which is nice to see. And then we're going to talk about maybe what some dream highlight videos we'd like to see from our favorite clips.
All that and more, guys, coming up soon.
So right off the bat, biggest thing, I guess, really, the SI Top 100, the first 50 came out.
Bigger question, if they're going to stretch this thing out,
why only halves?
Why not?
I had that same thought.
Why not spread it out over an entire work week of just 20?
I thought my page didn't load. I was like, well, they gave me the first 50. Why on earth would they keep? Because anyway, some notables on there. I'm pretty convinced that Dwight Howard wrote this article himself because he was number 69, and that seems like something he would do.
Great ranking.
Lonzo Ball was number 100. The Clippers, I think probably the only Clippers that are going to be on this list, unless they put Boban or Milos at number one, is Tobias Harris at 65 and Lou Williams at 61.
Yeah.
Which, some notable people ahead of these two were Joe Ingles and Harrison Barnes, two people I don't necessarily think are maybe better.
I don't know. I think it just depends. Like, Joe Ingles, obviously not, like, the scorer that Lou Williams is. I mean, honestly, not the scorer that Tobias Harris is. But I guess I see the argument in him being like he's a really valuable two-way player, and he's not a super ball dominant guy. I don't know, man. I think that Joe Ingles does have a pretty good game. It's hard to quantify. Like Jeff Teague,
100 players. Yeah, it's like
Jeff Teague was above Lou on this, and that one I find like a little bit more perplexing. There, I mean, obviously they're like kind of. It's like that same thing of like he's more well-rounded, but like I still don't think that any part of Jeff Teague's well-rounded game is even close to the offensive upside that Williams brings.
100%. And I would also...
And I like Jeff Teague.
And I also think that Tobias is better than Lou. Tobias was 65, Lou was 61. I guess that's close, but in my eyes, I would maybe rather have Tobias on my team than Lou.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting too, especially like right with where Tobias was at. Mm-hmm. They had him above Aaron Gordon, which, you know, I think is correct.
Yeah.
And, you know, above Julius Randle, way above like Brandon Ingram and some other guys that you hear a lot about. Above DeMarcus Cousins and Miles Turner.
It's such a weird... I mean, I guess I'm excited for the next 50. I don't know when they release those next 50.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I mean, like, I still think that 65 is good. I think that I think that they're underrating him for what he is.
For sure.
But, I mean, you're still... I mean, like, I think that it's low in that, like, saying that Tobias Harris isn't one of the top half. Like, he's not in the 50
best
percentile.
Players. Yeah.
I think is incorrect. I don't know what metric that you're using that he's outside of the 50th percentile.
Yeah, and they used like injured players, like they said like injuries didn't count. I don't know. These lists are
They're very subjective. This is like the fodder. This is the reason why these things exist.
For
but
sure.
I see that as being low. The Lou Williams one, I also believe that he should be higher.
I have this weird thing where in my brain, if you really wanted to argue with me, you could argue he should be lower too.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? Because like in the analytics mind, all he provides is scoring.
Yeah.
And that's it.
But I think though for like squarely where he sits, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, you know, JJ Redick or something like that, he's directly above. And I see that as being a pretty apt comparison with Lou just being a more versatile scorer.
For sure. That's a good call.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'll keep an eye out for that next half. Clippers are going to be on it,
I think. I was kind of surprised. Gortat, I don't think, is going to be anywhere in this top 100 list.
That makes sense.
I'm thinking a solid 99.
So you're surprised that he wasn't the second name that you saw on the list. I could have sworn this guy was going to be in the, you know, top 98, top 97 players.
One rating that I do find to be, like, particularly weird is rating Nurkic over Tobias Harris. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I don't want that.
I don't see that at all.
I don't want any Nurk on our team.
Yeah, I think that, like, you know, he definitely has upside.
He gets in foul trouble. He has a bad attitude. Like,
I just don't see it.
He's not best friends with Boban. Like, why is he even on the list?
Yeah, and I just see Tobias as being, like, a so much more versatile player. So that one is just a head scratcher.
Well, they got what we wanted because we're talking about it. That was the biggest news pretty much in the NBA and I guess in Los Angeles. Coming up, we're going to run through, we got a nice freshy segment kind of about our two big draft picks. But first, guys, fantasy football is underway. My team is already in shambles and I'm pretty bummed out about it. But Lockdown Fantasy Football 24/7 has all the latest news, waiver suggestions, and injury updates. Lockdown Fantasy Football is now Locked On Fantasy Football Experts with amazing guests every day. Monday, we got Tom Kucinich. Tuesdays, Eric Edholm. Wednesdays, Jeff Ratliff and Taylor Lochner. Guys, get your subscription on.
All right, guys, so it's time for the Freshies, which is our weekly rookie segment. We actually have a little decent amount of stuff to talk about today. We're going to talk about Shea and Jerome, obviously the big ones. And then we're actually going to dive into a little bit. There's some interesting things I found, some comparisons between Ty Wall and Klay Thompson. So let's just start with the Shea and Jerome stuff.
There's some beefcake picks from Shea.
Yeah, he's looking very strong.
You put swole in the show notes. I don't know if he's looking swole. He is looking strong.
He is looking strong. He's looking very vascular. Yeah. Like there's more veins on his arms, which I guess it means you're stronger.
Is that good? Is more veins good?
It definitely increases your VO2 max. So
man, that's great. Every time I used to get shots in grade school, the nurses would always compliment how big my veins were.
Oh, wow.
One of them said if I wanted to be a heroin addict, it wouldn't be hard, which I always thought was a very weird thing for
very
a nurse
bizarre advice.
To tell a grade schooler. Luckily, I didn't take that advice.
Clutch Points recently did a short but pretty decent interview with our own logo, Jerry West. And he just kind of like broke down his belief in Shea and Jerome. And I essentially what it boiled down to was that he really liked like the superior kind of core instinct of Shea.
Yeah.
And then he kept mentioning like this intelligent cerebral play of Jerome Robinson, which hopefully we get to see a little bit more of. You know, I know from just like a purely stats thing, he's like great at reading the pick and roll, which, you know, I would associate with intelligence. Yeah, I guess the big thing I wanted to do in this freshie segment is just kind of revisit a little bit of summer league stuff. I feel like it was ages ago now.
Yeah, the regular season is 36 days away. Training camp's only 14 days. So yeah, we should. Nice to remind everyone where we were at.
Yeah. So just looking back at Shea's summer numbers: 19 points, 5 boards, 4 assists, almost 2.5 steals.
That's what jumps out at me, dude.
In 28 minutes of play. So I guess like what I'd like to talk about a little bit today is like, what do you think is sustainable? Like I'm assuming
15 minutes a game, right?
Yeah, like what do you think his per 15 is?
Per 15, I'm thinking 9 points.
Okay.
2 boards. Gonna keep it at 4 assists.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
And then I think steals, maybe 1. Steals are such a goofy stat also, but I think maybe one. I think he's going to be one of those guys who like gets in passing lanes with his long limbs and stuff like that.
Definitely.
But I think his assists will maybe stay the same. I think if him and Gortat are on the floor together, I think I could see him racking up 4 assists. But I would be fine with
him and Harrell.
Yeah, that would be great. But I would be totally content with like 9, 3, and 4 or whatever like that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say I'm pretty close. I was thinking probably a little bit closer to the 12 points mark.
Nice. I mean, I would love that.
Just depending, I mean, if he's playing against, you know, if he's playing bigger minutes, but against like bench units.
For sure.
I do think that a lot of that core instinct is really going to, I think it's going to be really beneficial. And he's, you know, we talk about his size so much. And, you know, while maybe the weight isn't there, he is still large. Like,
yeah, he's
pretty large for
a
guard.
He's a big man, yeah.
So I do think that that's going to help him out. But yeah, I'd say basically around the same as your prediction, like probably 12 points, maybe 3 boards, 4 assists.
Do you want him to play more against more second units, or you want him thrown into the against first team guys?
I mean, a mix, just depending on time, but I, you know, like,
I'm going to throw him into the fire guy, which is probably a bad idea, but I'm like, yeah, start him sometimes. Like, let him see maybe against lesser teams, you know, maybe not against like the Warriors or something like that, where your confidence can just be destroyed. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe against the Suns or something like that. Like, let, depending how the season's going, let's test out these waters of what he looks like against actual starting units.
Interesting. And who do you start him over? Like, what would be your starting lineup if Shea is in it?
I'd put Shea. And then just for pure fun, it'd be like Shea, Lou,
okay,
Gallo, Tobias, Trez.
I like that lineup.
That's a good lineup.
I like that lineup.
I think if Shea's defense, that's a lineup that like there's a ton of shooting, like there's a ton of energy. They would run. That'd be a fun. I hope we see that.
Yeah.
But against like, yeah, the Spurs or the Mavs, or not the Spurs, sorry, the Suns or the Mavs or something like that.
Yeah.
Not the Warriors.
The Kings.
Yeah, the Kings. I don't want to see my boy get humbled by the Warriors, especially in that early stretch. I'm worried. We can kind of talk about Robinson with this because he was kind of hurt, and I'm worried in that early stretch there's just going to be no time for the two new young guys because it's so hard.
Yeah, it's such a difficult stretch of games that, you know, and I keep reiterating this, but I think the most important thing to me is like through that beginning opening, like 12, it's like 12 to 14 game stretch,
let's win six.
Oh, if we went 500, I think that'd be incredible. I think that'd be awesome. But I'm just saying, like, on top of that, like, I, you know, wins aside, what I want to see is I want to see Shea playing 12 minutes per game.
Yeah, I'm kind of more on the train of, like, let's just develop these guys and we'll get wins as they come.
Yeah. But yeah, so Robinson, you know, he had a shorter, summer league stint. He, had some knee and wrist issues. I guess the knee one kind of got bumped in game.
Like a little knock, as they
call
it.
Yeah, it was my understanding. So does any of that make you worry about his durability?
Not really, because they took him out so quick.
Mm-hmm.
Is that they were just like, we're not even going to risk this being a thing. Cause I think I was watching that summer league game and he was just like, he kind of took a weird knock and then he was out. And I'm like, yeah, fine. Like, great. We already know, you know, we, especially with Robinson, where like it came out of such left field because our team had so much insider knowledge in that training situation with him that I was like, do whatever you guys got to do. But I would be more concerned if it was Shea, just because
so much more is going to be riding on him.
So much more is riding on him. And it just seemed like they handled it well. They took him out immediately and they were like, we're going to shut you down. It's fine.
Yeah. And I mean, here's another thing is like with summer league, you know, obviously you like to see any small injury, them just taking the guys out. It's just not, it's not worth anything.
Yeah.
So I guess from that, that regard, I'm not really worried about his durability yet. I personally kind of doubt that it was an injury that was too serious.
Yeah. He could, I assume he could have played.
Yeah. I just think that it was bugging him and there's just no point in
no
like,
reason. Unless you're Tibbs.
Yeah. And there's just no point in like trying in like exacerbating that, for games that are so meaningless.
But he's still, like you put down here, he still averaged 14-3-2.
Yeah. Which is,
I think his scoring will probably go down, but the 3-2 will probably stay the same.
Yeah, if that stayed consistent, that'd be, I mean, that'd be super solid. You know, we've talked about, I don't really, I think he's going to be probably at the bottom of the rotation minutes-wise, which, at the guard position.
Yeah, which bums me out, man. I want to see him play, be it for Agua Caliente, be it for the Clippers. I just want to see Jerome play.
Yeah.
I didn't watch a lot of Boston College basketball.
No.
So, like, I just want to see him develop. But, I don't know, I had a medium spicy take on here. I think one of our episodes where I did think that maybe Jerome would have a better season than Shea.
You think so?
I think maybe. I mean, a lot of chips have to fall the right way. But I think if given the time, he could really show his scoring ability and just his defensive prowess developmentally.
Yeah.
I want it to happen. I want them both to have great seasons. But I think Shea is definitely the focus.
For sure.
Getting all the press and stuff like that.
For sure. It just seemed like, it just does seem that Jerry does have a lot of belief in
he has a plan.
As well.
That's the thing, is that I'm always like, I don't know what's going to happen, but it feels good that there's a plan. Because with all, like, you know, the Paul Pierce signings, all that other stuff, it never felt like there was a cohesive, it didn't feel like there was a plan, because I feel like they were just kind of grabbing at stuff.
That's a very good point.
And now there's like kind of this template for players they want to get, high hustle, high motor, multi-year guys who are hungry. So it kind of fits in this like core idea.
It's definitely like stepping in the same direction.
Yeah, we're going, it may not be an upward trajectory, but there's a trajectory that at least is nice to see.
Just going off of that like future trajectory, wanted to talk a little bit more about the Ty Wall re-sign. I know that both of us were like, No, I mean, like, it didn't completely come out of left field, but we were a little surprised just given the roster constraints. I think it's really interesting, though. I just, you know, Jerry was so instrumental in making the Warriors what they were, you know, both, like, helping to lure Kevin Durant. And then also, like, you know, the Warriors wanted to trade away Klay Thompson in 2014 for Kevin Love.
Back Kevin Love.
And, you know, Jerry was one of the big reasons that they ended up staying with Klay. And it kind of made me think, you know, is he seeing something further out that we're not catching yet for Tyrone Wallace?
I think he is, because a lot of people made the comment after the Clippers matched the New Orleans offer that if you're New Orleans, you were like, oh, well, maybe we were onto something because Jerry West likes this guy so much that, like, ah, damn, we really should have gone after it. Do you think he's going to get bigger offers because of that?
Because
the Pelicans still need a backup point guard. Can they re-offer? Can they send another offer? Or do you get, like, one shot?
I am not positive on that. Yeah, if anybody knows a lot about contract negotiations, feel free to hit us up. I feel like he could still take other offers, but I'm not positive.
Mm-hmm.
I think at this point it seems like a pretty set thing. Just going off this Klay Thompson analogy, both these dudes actually had similar numbers throughout their rookie campaigns.
I like it.
With Tyrone Wallace actually leading Klay Thompson in total rebounds, steals, and assists. Just by marginal differences, Klay definitely scored more than Ty by about 3 points per game.
That's a lot.
I mean, yes, it is, but not really when you consider, like, I mean,
that's one shot, I guess.
It's like 1 3-point shot. So I'm not too mad at that. That's like the biggest discrepancy between the two people, between both of their numbers, is that, you know, Ty is like a 30% 3-point shooter and Klay, obviously, like in the mid 40s practically. What I was impressed by was, like, Tyrone's, effective field goal percentage is still like 45%, which
I love
is
that.
If you're anywhere incredibly efficient,
if you're anywhere close to 50,
especially like for a rookie, like I would think that, you know, your instincts are only going to get better and you're going to pick your spots even wiser and you're going to know when you can score, how to score, who you can score on. So I would think that, like, that efficiency is something that would continue to translate.
You think his usage will go up,
barring an injury? You know, like, once again, I don't know how much.
I don't know.
I don't know how much Ty Wall we're going to see. Just really hard. There's just, like, there's so many guards. I don't know. Unless we maybe move somebody out of position or something, I'm just really unclear. I'm actually wondering at this point if we don't see more of, like, Sin maybe, like, in a small ball three kind of role.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And I think that maybe in small ball lineups, depending on how he does, you could also maybe toss Jerome into that kind of, like, small ball three sort of rotation.
Because a guy on Twitter,
I don't really know.
I know. I was talking about this on Twitter, and someone was like, don't perpetuate this thing that Doc doesn't play young guys. Like, Ty Wallace is a back-end rotation player. I'm like, I mean, he might have been last year, but we matched the offer sheet on him.
Yeah.
So we clearly want him.
Yes.
And in a situation where there's a second-year guy and a first-year guy, I assume Doc is going to trust the second-year guy more.
I mean, you know? There's that much more of, like, a veteran presence, and you just know.
And that's Doc's tendency.
Yeah. I mean, and it makes sense from a coaching perspective. I mean, like.
Yeah, I'm not knocking it as an overall thing, but it's like, we just want to see the young guys get more playing time.
Yeah. He just has that. He's just put in more of those reps, Ty has.
For sure.
And, like, you as a coach, I think it's a little bit more reassuring when you know how someone is going to react in game.
Especially with tumultuousness of last year, seeing him come in and be like, all right, I got to contribute right away, maybe not even thinking he was going to get major playing time.
Definitely.
It's an exciting young season.
Yeah. I mean, it can be, you know, there's like,
or it could all go up in flames.
And I don't necessarily mean that it would all go up in flames, but, you know, if we don't see a lot of play or a decent amount of, like, you know, warming up of these rookies, I think that to me will be very disappointing for the season as a whole. Like, I'm personally not that concerned with, like, how we finish in the standings or anything this season. What I'm the most concerned with is, like, developing this core. Like, I want to see the Clippers develop talent.
Yeah,
like actually develop talent. Or, you know, I don't really know. I mean, like, what are we just going to be the team that takes the big swings for free agency guys all the time? Like, that's just not how you build a good team.
Yeah, agreed.
So, yeah, I don't know. I guess that's about all I really had for the freshies.
That's a good freshies.
So yeah, before we get into our segment three, is going to be like just some Clippers team talk. We got some interesting things coming up, some possible trades, and a lot of theoreticals. but before we get into that, I just want to tell you guys that the Locked On Network is expanding with college shows.
College football shows.
Can you believe it? So coming this week, there's going to be Locked On Wolverines, Locked On Buckeyes, and Locked On Seminoles.
Semis.
Plus, we're already locked on to the Ducks, the Lions, Bears, Crimson Tide, Wildcats, the Razorbacks, the Volunteers, and the Cougars.
Go Cougs.
So you can find your favorite college show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or really anywhere that you get podcasts. I'm pretty sure they have them out there. So check that out, guys. And
right now, I mean, the biggest thing, so apparently the Suns, you know, they had like 50 million good point guards on their team and then traded everyone away. They allegedly are just targeting Patrick Beverley, which someone, there was a great article that was posted on, I think, Clipperholics about how people, you know, because I overreacted when I first saw this.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, we can't get rid of Patrick. It's weird that his contract is non-guaranteed. I don't like that at all for this trade scenario. But, like, this is the Suns who've discussed it. They haven't contacted the Clippers. But that trade does kind of make sense. I don't want to see it done, but, like, the Suns have things they could move.
And
we still need to cut down two players, and his contract is non-guaranteed.
Yeah.
So it sucks, but, like, the pieces kind of fit.
Pieces there, or, like, a Milos trade. I could definitely see that happening.
I kind of want him to trade Milos, if I'm being 100% honest.
Really?
I think at this point, with where the team is, he's in the way.
Okay.
He's not going to be on the team in 2 years.
Yeah.
He's going to be, what, 34?
Yeah.
He's just not going to be...
You know, you just don't think there's any way he ties into long-term stuff, so...
I don't think he can. Like,
yeah.
It seemed, you know, his response, like, he seems to like the Clippers, but he's not exactly really in love with them. He didn't get any bigger offers from teams in Europe, so we kind of stay with the Clippers was what his response seemed like. So it's like, you know, play the minutes, and that's awesome, but, like, I don't think we should keep him after next year.
I mean, I guess I'd be inclined to agree. I think that he's, like, a fun player to watch.
I love Milos.
I love him. And he was like, he was, you know, when he was playing, he was very entertaining last season. But I guess, you know, you bringing this up, I would really have to agree with you. You know, that's time that the rookies aren't getting time.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, you know, while, you know, he has more of a veteran presence and he is definitely a more established player.
Very smart.
Very smart. Like, great, great passer, obviously. But I don't see any sort of like successful future for the Clippers or even long-term future in which Milos is there, which, you know, is a bummer, but like that, I just don't see it.
And if he'd be down like maybe next year, the year after, to take like a much more reduced role, that'd be great. Come in and play 12 minutes or whatever and dish some sick full court underhand passes. That's awesome. But I think playing him any like lion's share of minutes is going to be, I will see that as a pretty big issue with the rotation.
Yeah. And I just because of like his, you know, defensive shortcomings and stuff and, you know, his turnover rate, there's very, you have to be very selective with players that you're pairing him with.
Yeah.
In the backcourt.
Yeah, he eliminates so many people you can pair him with.
Yeah. And so I guess unless he's playing alongside a rookie, you know, I guess I'd rather see a rookie play those.
Yeah, 100%. But speaking of Milos, number one Serbian hunk, as you put in the notes, he was hanging out with Novak Djokovic. I probably pronounced that wrong. The tennis player who, fresh off his US Open win, third ranked player in the world. It is cool how Serbian athletes are such a tight-knit group.
Yeah, it
really
is.
Like, they all ride or die for each other.
Definitely.
I think because, I mean, Serbia is small as hell.
Yeah.
But it does produce, like, an insane amount of world-class athletes.
Yeah. Being, like, basketball. I mean, is basketball probably the number one sport?
I'd assume.
Sport?
And all those,
hockey?
I mean, kind of. Basketball is even bigger.
Oh, I just mean, like, in terms of, like, Serbian players.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I guess hockey. I would assume basketball, though.
Yeah, I would guess that basketball is still the biggest.
I think their legacy in the NBA is just going to be, it's going to be like all those, you know, the Eastern Bloc countries and stuff of like really smart players, the creativity is such a different kind of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Like the creativity for like Eastern European players is this really cool vibe of looking like you're not trying.
Yeah.
But you're so much farther ahead. And like one of my favorite soccer players of all time is Dimitar Berbatov. And he was always criticized for not looking like, you know, like he wasn't trying. And he was like, that's how you look smooth and technical where I'm from. It's like you have this kind of like laissez-faire, like I'm just looking around, but I'm, you know, throwing full court underhand passes and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's kind of like the La Liga argument where like maybe the competition level isn't as high, but like the beauty of the game is like so much more.
Yeah.
So I see that as a kind of being that'll be like what the kind of legacy of Serbian NBA basketball players is. I think thus far, the continuing thing, and it's kind of a bummer, is that like we just get to see these great guys.
Too late. It's been, that sucks. I wish Milos would have come over 5 years ago, but
yeah.
I also understand wanting to play in your home continent and stuff
definitely.
Like that. Especially as the leagues around the world get more established. It's like, yeah, if I was from Spain, I'd much rather play in Spain than come and like play for like Milwaukee or like, well, they're good now, so that doesn't matter. But like Brooklyn or like something like that, where you're like, well, I'm far from home and this kind of sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'd definitely be taking the sacrifice in playing time and most likely contract too. Like
for sure.
If you're from that country and you're like a well-known player, I'm sure that you're making more money than a rookie scale contract in the NBA.
Definitely. And promos.
Yeah.
Definitely. All right. Real quick. We got 2 weeks to training camp, 36 days to the regular season. What's your dream workout?
I have a couple lined up.
Okay.
I got a couple on deck that I want to fire off at you. Yesterday was his birthday, so he's been on my mind. The Prince, obviously, Luke, Richard, and Bahamute. I want to see some videos of him just throwing down nasty dunks. I want to know that
shoulder's okay.
Better.
All right.
And I want to see him jumping over people and just throwing down dunks.
All right, posterizing regular dudes. What's the other one?
So other than that, I really want to see Boban setting screens and then like rolling off the screen and just pulling up.
Just a nice 1 foot hook.
Like him setting a screen, like rolling off, getting the ball and just popping it.
Yeah, okay. I agree with that.
Because he can shoot over anyone.
Yeah, I guess my dream highlight vid would be like him just doing a shooting drill around the 3-point line and just watching his weird form. That'd be mine. And since you had two, I guess, I mean, the other one is just a video of Shea pounding Nathan's hot dogs. Just trying to up that weight, you know? Just getting filled out, getting that body ready. I want to see a little bit of a thick Shea this year, but slowly but surely, he will become the thick point god, I think.
And as a third, I just want to see Sin knocking down shots.
He's been quiet this offseason, but I like it. I feel like he's like in his cave and he's figuring out how to truly demolish the league this year.
Yeah, he looked great in summer league. I'd just like to see him I'd like to know that he is a less tentative scorer.
Yeah.
And he's like ready to, you know, initiate an offense or like get the ball and create.
Based on fools. Nice.
Yeah, that's about all I have. Do you guys have, if anybody out there has some dream highlights, you know, just send them our way.
Send them our way, guys. We will see you on Wednesday. And yeah, let's go Clips.